A lot of civil rights legislation became law in the 1960s. The Civil Rights Act of 1964, the Voting Rights Act of 1965, these are the headliners. But there was also a Civil Rights Act of 1968, and that is often referred to as the Fair Housing Act. The act turns 50 this year, and while it may be true that fewer people are turned away from renting or buying a house because of their ethnicity, it still happens. So the law is still needed, and so are organizations like the two we're about to talk to. One is the Fair Housing Council of Oregon, where Louise Dix is the AFFH specialist. Louise Dix, thanks for joining us.
I'm glad to be here.
And Almarosa Alvarez is back with us as well, representing the Racial Equity Coalition of Southern Oregon. Almarosa, welcome back to The Exchange.
Glad to be here.
So, Louise, private and nonprofit, how long has the Fair Housing Council of Oregon existed?
We started in 1991, so quite a few years back. Yeah.
So that would indicate that even, you know, within 25 years of the passage of the Fair Housing Act, or that there was some sense that there was a need for further efforts to make sure that housing was fair.
Definitely. And there are fair housing councils like ours in Oregon all over the country. So a lot of them are, we do both education and enforcement. And the difference with ours compared to a lot of others are we emphasize education. We want to work with landlords and realtors and property managers so that they know the law. We try not to be punitive unless we have to.
I was going to get a little ruder than that and just say you try to provide carrots before sticks.
There you go.
But so what kinds of things do people often not realize they're doing? It sounds like is it safe to say it is often more unconscious than not?
I tend to think it's that way because I don't like to think that people have evil intentions, but I'm sure some of it might be deliberate. But in general, yeah, they don't know. Like, for example, recently the housing choice vouchers it's now illegal to say no HUD, no Section 8. And that just happened in the last couple of years. So somebody that says, I'm not going to take anyone that has a Section 8 voucher, that's not legal now.
So the tenant even should not even be asking, you know, do you take HUD? Because the answer is yes. Okay, how long has that been in effect?
July 2015.
Mm-hmm. And are you finding slow compliance with that or slow recognition of that?
It was slow in the beginning. We're now, I think we've got it pretty much covered all around the state. There's some, you know, rural areas that may not have gotten to it yet, way boonies, maybe okay. Eastern Oregon and stuff, but we're getting there.
All right, so let's move off to Almarosa Alvarez because your organization is a bit more of a recent entity than the Fair Housing Council of Oregon. How did the Racial Equity Coalition get started?
Well, we initially got started because we wanted to offer a space for people to come together to process the decisions that were made in the Mike Brown case and also in the Eric Garner case. So we actually intended to sort of get together as a maybe one-time deal to offer either a morning space, a processing space for community folks. We knew that we had a space here at the university where people were able to process their emotions and feelings. And we quickly began realizing that some of the conversations were not only about processing those feelings, but that people were expressing a need to do something about some of the racism in Southern Oregon. And so we were like, wow, I guess we should meet again because there seems to be a need. And then we began sort of hosting monthly meetings. And that's so initially our name was the Ferguson Space. Mm-hmm. And
it grew much bigger than Ferguson in a short time.
And then the next thing we knew, we realized that there were a lot of things that we needed to take care of here at home. And so that's how we got started. Yeah.
And so has housing entered the picture much? I mean, you haven't been around that long.
So for us, you know, what we've primarily heard from people, so we're an advocacy group and we're also an educational group. So we try to provide race conversations. You know, when you ask Louise about whether people are doing things consciously or unconsciously, we find that a lot of people have unconscious bias that they need to work through. And so our mission has been to work with, educating people about those biases that they have. And so in terms of the complaints that we receive, they're mostly on the educational front, people who have children in the school systems, sometimes issues at work or issues, in stores or things like that. And that's what we primarily hear in terms of complaints. So we haven't had any that I'm aware of housing complaints.
Okay. So we're talking about housing here on the Jefferson Exchange. and examining things in the light of the 50th birthday of the Fair Housing Act of 1968. Louise Dix is with the Fair Housing Council of Oregon. Alma Rosa Alvarez is with the Racial Equity Coalition of Southern Oregon. And you can join the conversation at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email. It's jx@jeffnet.org. Louise, we did mention at the outset that you are the AFFH specialist, which is the Affirmatively Furthering Fair Housing specialist,
right,
at the Fair Housing Council of Oregon. And there's some interesting news about AFFH. That was just two S. Do you have as much trouble saying this as anybody else does?
Yes.
Okay, good. That's good to know.
That's why I abbreviate.
All right. So why was the AFFH thing created in the first place?
It's in the 1968 Act, mm-hmm, and it's still there. But what happened recently is there was a move to make it more proactive in terms of enforcement, so that when jurisdictions, for example, sign that they are affirmatively furthering fair housing when they take community development block grant funds, they really are. They're being proactive with the Fair Housing Act. What we're doing at Fair Housing Council is we have a whole land use project. We work with Housing Land Advocates, which is an affordable housing group. And we, when we get a plan acknowledgement, which a change in a comp plan or a zoning, it goes to the Department of Land Conservation, and we look at that, and we determine, is there bias happening? Are they, for example, are they taking land out of multifamily housing and putting it into single-family housing? And so we're really taking a close look to make sure that zoning and comp plan changes aren't going to really hurt protected classes, which is what in the Fair Housing Act are race, color, national origin, religion, disability, so on.
But the effort to put some teeth into the Fair Housing Act was an Obama administration thing, right?
Exactly. And there was a lot that happened there. Mm-hmm. A lot of changes, a lot of guidance came down. Yeah, but now it's being kind of subtly dismantled by being put on hold. They're not having – they changed the what they called the fair housing assessment. It used to be called the analysis of impediments, which had no teeth. And each jurisdiction had to talk about what they were going to do to remove barriers to fair housing. The new part said they had to make it based on data and have to show measurable outcomes. They've gotten rid of that. So now it's just a kind of a flowery thing again.
So more of a feeling than a real issue of having some numbers.
They said it's postponed because people aren't, the jurisdictions are having a hard time and they don't have enough technical assistance to get it. That's their rationale.
So. I do want to point out that you two will be part of a panel coming up on Thursday called Ghosts from Our Past, A Portrait of Discrimination in Southern Oregon. That'll be 7 to 9 on Thursday evening at the Higher Education Center for RCC and SOU in Medford. And that'll include Louise and Alma Rosa, also Jeff LaLand, representing the Historical Society, Chelsea Rose, who is a regular on the program from the Southern Oregon University Laboratory of Anthropology. Mm-hmm. So you mentioned that there's nothing in particular about housing as a focus for the Racial Equity Coalition.
So it isn't that we aren't interested in focusing on that. We are sort of, we have our own sort of educational mission. We respond to complaints as we get them, and so we haven't, to this date, you know, we've been around as a coalition, I think, 3 years now, and so we haven't received any kinds of formal complaints around housing issues. That's not to say that they don't exist. I think that sometimes what happens is we get some of the more immediate, you know, like some kind of racial act in a store or something like that.
Somebody's saying horrible things to people.
Right, yeah. Right. But, you know, I want to say that, you know, as a person of color, I've actually experienced housing discrimination twice.
Really? In the Rogue Valley?
Yeah. The first time was when I first came here 21 years ago. The folks were really pleasant on the phone when I spoke to them and gave my husband and I an appointment to come and look at a place. And it was one of those deals where there were various parties that were asked to come to look at a place. And then we were refused an application. And I insisted on getting an application. And I was, you know, the story we got was that there was someone from Hawaii who had, you know, like, miraculously appeared or called on the phone and put in a deposit for the place we were looking at. And I was like, well, so then why are we all here? Like, why are all these, like, people?
Other people, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So we insisted on an application, and we said, you know, well, if something changes in the status, we want to be in the queue, you know. And we begrudgingly got an application. We filled it out at a McDonald's when it existed here. In Ashland. And we decided not to turn the application into that person. We went directly to the property management company. And by that point in time, that person was arriving, and I could tell that there was like, oh, remember the man from Hawaii, you know, and
like it, you're in on my story. Yeah.
Yes. And so that was our first introduction into like, the Southern Oregon housing market. I was coming in as a new faculty member,
At Southern Oregon University.
Yeah, and so it was really shocking, you know, to me.
But, and you say it happened a second time, too?
Yeah, so the first one was here in Ashland, and the second time it happened to me in Talent. You know, we eventually secured housing, my landlady was selling her place. And so we began looking for a new place. And again, same situation. People were very pleasant on the phone. I'm guessing that they must have not asked for my name, because they probably would have been able to tell me, you know, that housing wasn't available. But it was, I got out of my car. I was pregnant at the time. And the man that came to show me the house saw me with such a look of disgust, and quickly said, no, it's been rented. Like, we don't, you know, we can't show you the place. And I was like, I just talked to someone on the phone, and that's why I'm here, you know. And I'm sure that, you know, there's been some mistake. Nope. You know,
well, end of
waving his hands, and just very, you know,
almost like get back in the car, it sounds like.
Yeah. And, you know, it was such a horrible feeling, you know, to sort of go, oh my God, like someone just looked at me and was like clearly disgusted by my appearance, my presence, et cetera.
My pregnancy.
The other one that I thought that, you know, in this case, I think I was subjected doubly, because I was like, I'm a woman of color. And I thought, is this man imagining, like, how many children is this woman coming with? And, you know, all of those kinds of things.
So how often do you get reports like what Omarosa is talking about?
Pretty much every day.
Every day still. Wow.
Yeah, maybe not exactly like that. More than 50% of the complaints that we get have to do with disability, people with disabilities not being able to get housing. But that kind of thing where someone calls in and then shows up, that happens all the time. We send out testers if we think it's maybe systemic, or even if it's just one case, we'll send out testers or have them call and do the same thing to see what's going on.
And those have been widely reported, even in places that consider themselves very fair and liberal, like Ashland, where the testers, the white people will say, yeah, it's available, or the potential white renters will be told, yeah, it's available, and people of color will hear, no, it's
exactly.
not.
Exactly, yeah.
Wow. How often do you send testers out?
We wish we could do more. We're constantly looking for people to be trained as testers. It's a great thing to do if you like to play act. So we do try to go and have tester training all over the state. But we have most of our testers, of course, are in the Portland area. So, and it's hard to get out to different places. So.
And how much more difficult is the whole picture, given the incredible tightness of the
housing
market?
That makes it extremely difficult because of the tightness, yeah. So there's not a lot of vacancies, so they can't get into test. Yeah.
Housing, fair housing, and the lack of it, the topic for discussion here in the Exchange. Louise Dix is with the Fair Housing Council of Oregon. Omarosa Alvarez is with the Racial Equity Coalition of Southern Oregon, and she's a teacher at Southern Oregon University. They'll be in a panel on Thursday evening at the Higher Education Center in Medford at 7 o'clock called Ghosts from Our Past, A Portrait of Discrimination in Southern Oregon. And I want to come back to Omarosa, something you talked about earlier, unconscious bias, for people who may be carrying stuff around and not realizing it. What would be the good first steps for them to come to grips with who they are and how they feel about other people?
Well, we have, not only through the Racial Equity Coalition, but through different kinds of groups. So in April, I'm going to throw in a little plug. I'm part of the Finding Our Way conference that Mark Iaconelli is heading up. And so there are plenty of opportunities for people to get involved in race conversations. I know that my one of our co-founders for the Racial Equity Coalition, Marjorie Trueblood Gamble, has also been doing some implicit bias trainings. So we have some events happening in April where people can join in on some of those race conversations. Because what happens is a lot of times people really, you know, I think I'm with you, Louise, that I want to believe the best of people. Mm-hmm. And then what happens is that people are unaware of how their own lifestyle choices are actually exhibiting some of their biases. So I would say that a great first step is coming to some of those conversations or some of those implicit bias trainings. And if people look at our Racial Equity Coalition website for the month of April, they'll be able to see some of those events that are coming up.
Okay, but if they can't make it, I mean, when you say lifestyle choices indicate some level of unconscious bias, like how?
So, for example, in terms of lifestyle choices, sometimes it can happen to be where people choose to live, who they choose to associate with. So sometimes people will be very progressive and forward-looking and say, like, I'm really for diversity. But when you do like a little analysis of their lifestyle, you find that they actually don't ever have friends of color come over, or that they hang out with people of color, or so like in like philosophically they're for diversity, but in their own actual lived lives they don't actually have connections. And so we did a Race Equity Coalition Toolkit conversation training. And it was really eye-opening for our participants. You know, some of them were educators. Some of them were people working in the healthcare field. And we do a little inventory. And a lot of the people were really sort of saddened by their results, right? Because, again, philosophically, they're for diversity, but they're not actually doing it in their lived lives.
All right, so they live in fairly white circles.
Yes, you know, sort of yes.
Thing. All right. Any recommendations in the few seconds left with if people have issues with fair housing, where they should go, Louise Dix?
Well, they should call us. You know, we have an 800 number, which, of course, I didn't bring right away.
All right, Fair Housing Council, FHCO.org?
Yes.
Fair Housing Council.
That's
Oregon.
The best way. Information at FHCO.org if they have a concern or complaint. They can call there and come to this Living with a Ghost of Our Past and learn about our history of discrimination in Southern Oregon. It's not just Southern Oregon, all of Oregon, all of our country. One thing I would recommend is reading Richard Rothstein's Color of Law. It was amazing.
So. All right. Sounds good. We were talking about the Lash Law just yesterday here in the Exchange. Okay, mm-hmm. The Ghosts from Our Past is Thursday night at 7 at the Heck in Medford. Louise Dix and Omarosa Alvarez, thank you so much.
Thank you.